These are the moments we all live for. How many times have we seen these three work together? Elma Smit out of Africa, straight into the biltong shops of Southwest London. Emily Scarrett, Scazzy Das. Surely you can never run a switch too many times. And Mo Hunt, chippy, snipey, sporty, karaoke. Sounds like the new Spice Girls. Here they come, the good, the Scazz, the rugby.
The good, the Scazz, and the rugby brought to you by our good friends at Vodafone is back, back again.
Ooh.
Ladies back.
Here we go.
And this
tell
week,
a friend.
It's just us.
Guess who's back? Guess who's back? Guess who's back?
And Moses.
Hello.
She's got multiple voices going today.
That was like a recreation of the elf then.
Hello. Hello. I'm an elf. That was so good. Oh my God, we've not reflected on
that. No,
too
funny.
The Scazz made it in.
Hello.
And Meg Jones is here.
Hello.
Yay.
Whatever you do, don't go high pitch. Hello.
I don't think I could. I don't think I possibly could.
What can you do for us, Meg?
Hello.
In
Welsh? You're really good at, well, hello. It's like a hello.
Wait, and in South African?
Away.
Oh, damn it. I thought it was going to be the same.
Yeah.
No. In forest?
In forest. Speak forest.
Hola.
Hola.
That's, no, Albis.
Really?
Yeah.
What, forest dialect?
Yeah, Albis.
What does that mean?
Are we being serious?
I'm actually being serious. Yeah. Like if I want to say, hello, how are you? Yeah. I'd say, Albis Obert.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Fair You're play. All stunned. You don't know how to state that, but I swear to God.
Okay, fair play. Get in the DMs on the comments. Please let us know if Mo is having us
Would
on.
People still say that? Or is that like an older thing?
No, nah, granddad like used to, but not so much anymore. Albis Obert.
I love that.
Don't have to respond. You just know how to say, hello, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Great. Okay, well, we've got that out of the way now.
Yeah, sorry.
As we mentioned last week, when we had Giselle on, our Scazz and Mo had a big 2024. Many twists, many turns, even more so for our Meg. What a year. So this is your trigger warning. If you haven't read the story yet, we will be discussing loss today. If you are going through this kind of trauma yourself, then please just listen with caution, I would say. But before we do, and we do get into that conversation, Meg Jones has a gift for us.
I do.
She always makes puts all to shame.
You are the gift that keeps giving.
Thank you.
Give me that.
Yeah. So I just think it's just easy wins, isn't it? But if you look to your
cheap laughs.
Left or right, cheap laughs, you will have a gift. And unfortunately, obviously, Katie Daly McLean isn't with us.
Can you open that?
But we will. Should we open Katie's first?
Yeah.
And we've also Shira's also.
This was
one.
The one that didn't arrive in time for Christmas.
Christmas,
isn't it?
Yes.
Yep. Oh, belated Christmas.
Belated Christmas present. So,
you have
Katie
to describe
Daly McLean.
It.
Yeah. What is it?
Well, she's a blouse girl now, I think.
A what?
Blouse.
Blouse.
Is there a code for something?
What's a blouse?
What's a blouse?
Spell it.
No.
Is it onomatopoeic?
Yes, it's blouse.
Yes, it moves.
Is this because of her role in a sale?
Yeah, so she's
in her formal wear.
Certified legend. She's wearing a blouse. And yeah, that's just Katie.
And the fringe.
And the fringe, yeah. It was really tough, girls. I can't explain to you the tough.
It is a tiny Lego human.
You are good at detail.
And what does it say on the front?
Certified legend.
Certified legend. Wearing a blouse and a brown.
She's going to be chuffed to bits with that.
Yeah, I think that's accurate though.
Yeah, she'll be buzzing with that.
Very spot on. Yeah. Did you design these yourself?
I made these.
You next then, Scazz?
This took a good chunk of my time.
This is a Lego person in full England kit with a long pony. On the back, it says Scazz 13.
Oh, she is the Red Rose, isn't she?
She is.
She is our Red Rose.
What is she holding?
She is holding a trophy.
Yeah, don't know. You could only imagine what trophy that was.
Touch wood, Scazz.
No, 24.
Also, Scazz has got a bit of fringe going on at the front there.
There is.
Yeah, sorry, I don't know.
A bit old school. I used to have one of those. You know the ones that went diagonally across your face.
The emo
started on the other side.
Avril Lavigne. It looks like this.
Can I see up front? Up close, even.
Does look like the memes record on that trophy.
Oh, twist it. Yeah. Scazzy was hard, but I needed to go for the long pony look. You know when the
devil in the detail, Umbro, the O. Yeah.
Oh, the shoot before it.
The shoot. Yeah, you had a long pony then. That was
pony.
Scazzy.
So cute.
Can I look?
Of course you can, yeah. I'd love to see yours.
Megan, you are hilarious. So mine has...
Is it a cape?
Is it the right... Is this the right one?
That's yours, yeah.
Is this me?
You're the right one.
Yeah.
So I have an allyship cape that is the...
You're flying the flag for us.
It's the whole rainbow flag. It's got everything.
Red jumper.
A red Father Christmas, Mother Christmas jumper.
Yeah, sorry.
Because this was a Christmas gift.
It was, yeah.
And my black leather trousers.
Is that a cat?
Yeah. And there is a tiny kitty cat, Lego kitty cat, that comes with the allyship cape.
Yeah.
And very the good. Hair is how I wear my hair as well. That's really impressive, yeah, Megan.
No worries.
Good.
Very
work.
Good. Yeah. Very good.
And she's got makeup on.
Yeah. What's on it?
What is it? I can't see.
I'll tell you.
Oh, I've got a red lip, actually.
Yeah, you got a little red.
Do that.
Elma, I think you might have some LGBTQ+ stripes on your face as well, do you?
Oh, is that what those are? Yes. There is a bit of, it does look like I'm going to a festival, a bit of glitter, like a little face paint.
Oh, no, glitter. Glitter, yeah. You've got glitter, yeah.
Yes,
I thought that was a bit of you.
It is a bit of me.
Yeah.
Glitter and then a kitty cat. Colour.
Mojo?
I think Meg got funnier as this went on.
I started off with Katie.
Started with the
she
blast.
Was kind to Katie.
So mine, lovely hair, again, sunglasses, funky little smile to the side. Side lip smile, not sure about that one. The trainers are a bit dead, which Meg thinks that I do have anyway. Joking. My t-shirt says, I love refs. And the best bit about it is I'm holding, what is that? A bottle. And on the bottle it says feelings.
That's so amazing.
So I love
you
it.
You would carry a bottle of feelings around.
Yeah, I do. Constant. Yeah.
She battles to keep them bottled up. That's the problem. There we go.
Have you got one?
Yeah, I've got one. Show us the Meg one.
Oh yeah, this is good.
This is mine.
Sorry. Oh my God, and you wore the same outfit.
Little hat, yes.
Oh my goodness.
And I opted for shorter legs for the Lego. So if you put yours next to mine, Mo. No, you're not, but it's kind of a joke.
You actually admit that. But
oh my goodness.
I'm a little bit smaller as well.
The little Meg.
How
one.
Cute. And sorry, I have the LGBTQ+ flag on my face.
Oh,
you've got the glitter.
You actually have the outfit. You wear it quite a
that's
lot.
That's literally my outfit.
And it's that
couldn't put
hair
underneath, so I've tucked it in. See, that's me.
Nice.
And then Shira also has one.
Oh, I love
Shira
that.
With her love heart eyes, because she just sees the good in everyone, I think. Oh, Shira.
That's kind.
Green.
Wearing
obviously
green.
She's wearing green.
Obviously.
It's the Irish.
Other production things.
Okay. Yeah, other production things. She's armed and ready.
Shira falls over a camera's too big.
Yeah, she's too
your
invested.
Too much.
Yeah, the cape keeps. I keep falling on my nose because of the cape.
I'll sit, Shira.
But the kitty cat sits up nicely. Well, the amount of care that you have invested in being our convertible.
Yeah, I am really invested in it.
It's no surprise, considering the way our Meg has turned up on this pod, that she's also been announced as England's vice captain in a Rugby World Cup
year.
How do you feel, Vice Captain Meg?
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't really.
She's big on
speechless.
The quotes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, no, I think it's
some media training.
I think that's why I definitely got signed up for that. It's such a weird one because, like, no, it's not a weird one, but you don't really think about it as a big thing until you see all those posts on Instagram, I think. It was the first time it kind of hit me.
And also, you have been vice captain, haven't you?
Yeah.
So I guess it's not like
season or last
big
year
new
before
role.
WXV. Yeah.
It's just actually in a year that's massive.
Yeah, of course. And I probably haven't put that sort of outlook on it. But yeah, I mean, we've got an abundance of leaders within our group in the Roses team, an ample amount of people that could take that role. But it's kind of like, who's the right woman for the job? And Mitch seems to want to put his trust in me, and obviously with Packer and Zoe as well. Zoe leading the front. I just think, yeah, amazing opportunity, and massively feel honoured to be invited into the circle, but also have the reins to do that. And just, I don't think anything will naturally change. I'll just be myself, which I think people buy into sometimes,
all the time.
And yeah, that's all I can really do, is just be Meg and bring Meg as much as I can.
What does Meg bring, Mo?
What does Meg bring?
Lego.
It's out of Lego.
No, she brings so much. I think the thing about Meggie is she'll always drive that standard. I think that's one thing that I think you get from her, like Anzo and Pax, to be fair. But like, the standard that they bring and that they set is always of the highest. So you know that there's somebody you can always look to drive it. But the beauty about Meg is she's so brutally honest with a lot of people, which is something that like I definitely hugely respect and look up to. Just the ability to call anything out in the moment at the time that it needs to be said. And it's always respected because like her standards are of such a high level that you know that you have to like look up to that. And then like there's just the energy around you as well. Like the energy Meg brings is so infectious to a group, especially on pitch, but also like what you bring off pitch as well, which is epic. So
yeah. It's like an intensity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like
a bit intense.
No, you're not.
But as in like in her terms of more so like training, how you go about, like Mo said, driving the standards, bringing the energy, but then also that direct piece off field. Like it's really important within a leadership group that you don't have
and fluffy.
Packer and Zoe are definitely not this either, but you can't have a full leadership group of fluffy, yeah, that don't want to upset people or skirt around things and da da da. And Meg by no means upsets people, but she'll be direct and she'll be to the point. And sometimes you've got to keep things moving. Like we don't have time to faff around with things. So you need that. You need that piece, which I think, as you say, a lot of people appreciate.
What does Zoe and Marley bring to the mix? Because that is an interesting combination, the three of them. You co-captain with Zoe.
Yeah, I do co-captain with Zoe.
At club.
I just think that Zoe has the respect of everybody. Like, she's that player that has been world-class for pretty much as long as I know. Like, obviously, the only time I think I've known her to be on a bench or not really in a squad is, like, that 2017 World Cup year. And then since then, she's just thrived. And she's like playing with two people. Like, obviously, I'm lucky enough to play with her week in, week out. But the work rate of her, the tackles, like you saw the tackle Millie David potentially breaking at the weekend, and she just absolutely comes out of nowhere, swipes her down, and the counter attack's over. She's just so reliable. And I think she doesn't say a lot, but she always do our pre-match talk on the pitch, and everybody loves it. Like the stuff that she comes out with, everyone's so invested, so bought in, because there's so much love and admiration around her. And then I think just the, like I said, the standards. She's world class at that. Like everything she does is the highest ability, and she's always driving that. So she's so easy to follow.
Yeah, there's nobody that does it like harder than Zoe.
Yeah.
And when you're a captain and you're asking a lot of your team, or put your head in places, physicality, all of those things, and it's coming from somebody who you know like is
unquestionably
setting the standard and doing all of those things, you don't have any option but to be like, all right, I'll follow you.
She's also a crease.
So yeah. No, I was just saying, she's so pure and like, she just has such a heart of gold, and she's so genuine. And I think that's the only thing you can buy into, isn't it?
This just sums her up, right? We were playing at Hartbury, like, for Ed Stadium, like a while ago. And someone's like, can you smell deep heat? Like, what is that smell? Literally turn around. Zoe is lathering herself in deep heat because it was a little bit cold outside and she just didn't want to get cold. And then she'll like literally beat her chest. Like if she needs to like rev herself up a bit, she'll honestly stand there and her face is just like, and she'll just beat her chest. But did you see all of the photos? So obviously there was a lot of attention on social media yesterday about her. Every single photo is horrific of her. Like just because her game face.
In-game facials are,
so fierce. And that is genuinely how she plays the game. And so much respect for it.
Yeah, and that's what I think what's really interesting is none of the engagements that I've had with her off pitch, the off pitch Zoe is not the fierce warrior destroyer that you see on the pitch. I mean, none of her action photos actually correlate to the personality that you meet.
She's
meet
Rimmel London model.
She so is.
Why do you say that?
Because of her little gap.
All love.
And then where does this leave Marley Packer, Meg Jones?
Packer is heart on her sleeve, passionate, just drives that raw emotion, which I think is unquestionable at times. You know, it's like she's just got that energy that you like, oh yeah, okay, she really wants to like run into this brick wall head first for you. And that's really hard to find sometimes. She's just so authentic as well, because I think she's faced a lot of hardships in her life, and she's used that to power that emotion and power that drive in order for her to be the player she is. And that's Packer at her best, is that passionate fixer as well. We keep calling her a fixer, don't we? Yep. Bob the Builder. she wants the best for the team. She generally, you know, first thing she said when we were speaking the other day around her going to vice captain and Zoe getting the captaincy was that she believes that this is the best thing for the team, and going forward, the bottom line is we want to win and that's essentially the aim. And she's willing to put herself not self aside, you know, and be like,
well, "This really is what we need." She doesn't strike me as a follower.
Mm.
She strikes me as someone who's, you know, like really strong.
But she buys into the team and the fact that we want to be Red Roses first, and we want to strive to have, you know, this be the best in the world. She understands that, and it's not a one person job, it's literally the whole team, and she completely gets that.
She has a huge amount of lived experiences as well, not that Meg and Zoe don't, but completely different. Like Marley's lived through a hell of a lot, as you say, off field experiences as well, but also loads of on field experiences. She's been playing the game a long time. She's won a World Cup, she's lost two in a final. So like that off field that lived experience piece is massive to recall at times. And the other thing is, I think it's not irrelevant, but basically if you win a World Cup, who lifts the trophy? I think for a team and for us being in it, it doesn't matter who's lifting it, it's that we've done it.
Yeah.
So, and that is very much how I know you'll go about it, Zoe will go about it, and Marley will go about it. It's like, it's a nice icing on the cake, but it's certainly not, you know, the big piece.
I have a huge amount of respect for her, for how she's seems to have like handled it, and the way that she's spoken about it since obviously the news has come out. Like, I just think like it's made me really like invigorated and excited about the year. Like, we feel like it's
invigorated.
Good word.
No.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. But it genuinely, like, it's like I've had goosebumps a few times this week about like where we're actually going as a squad, and it just feels like everything's starting to click. And
yeah, for sure,
we're flying. Hopefully.
Can you explain why it's best for the team? So what was that conversation? When you say what's best for the team?
Well, she's backing Mitch's decision. You know, he's going in, he's got to make a decision on who's, you know, who, and she's saying, if this is what's best for the team, then I'm backing it, basically. So similar to what we were saying around, in terms of winning and being where we want to be on that number one spot. So.
You think as well, like the back row that we have is a joke.
It's what he said in his interview, isn't it?
Has it? I haven't read it, but yeah, the depth, the quality, the consistency of those players in the league at the moment is like, it is a joke. So actually for people to try and pick, or for Mitch and coaches to pick three out of that crazy pool of players is going to be a really tough job. And obviously Marley is and has had that shirt for a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she will push and continue to probably hold it. But I think it's also just saying that this, you know, we want the best people in that shirt whenever that time comes.
I think it's also good for her, like, go and focus
on
rugby.
Her up,
do you know what I mean? Like, 100%. It's not just the captaincy, is like, there's so many elements to it that people don't see, like the making sure the squad's okay, like the small conversations you have to try and foresee different bits that might become issues before they become issues, like making sure the group as a whole feel great, decisions on pitch, like so many elements to it that you don't necessarily see. You just see the like media fronted, okay, we run out first. Do you know what I mean? So
or
I think
the talking in the huddles and stuff 100%. Like that. It's a really time consuming thing and mentally consuming thing.
Definitely.
How did she find out about it? Has she spoken to you about it? When did you find out? Because you guys had a leadership session the other day, right?
We did.
And was it announced at the leadership session? Did she have a one-on-one conversation? Like, do we know how this happened?
So she had a one-on-one conversation.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not breaking any privilege to share. And then we found out just before we were in for that day. Mm-hmm. But this is what I mean about the respect thing. So we found out the day before, we sit in the meeting, and the first thing that's addressed pretty much was the Zoe Marley relationship and like how difficult that might have been this week, or equally for Zoe, because Zoe's a person that cares so much about people. So she was really worried about like if Pax was going to be okay about it all and like how she would show up. So like the way that Marley spoke in that, that's why I have so much respect about it, because straight away off the bat, it was dealt with in the group. The conversations were had and we all just kind of were like, okay, yeah, let's move on then.
Wow.
And this is the thing, there's so many leaders, like she possesses so many leadership qualities. That bit is never going to change. But I think we're right in saying like now she can literally focus on that and do that part of it, which is so important for the team. So important.
But you've got so many people, like you said, across the group. Like,
well, I'm sitting next to two of them.
But this is the question that I've had the whole time. So you guys had your leadership session. Skazzy, in almost any of the other top 10 countries at the moment on the log, if you were playing for any of the other ones, they'd turn to you and go, obviously, Emily Scarrett has to lead us into battle. She's seen everything. She's done everything. She is Emily Scarrett. Where does, like, it's interesting because when we had the conversation the other day with Kate Zachary, you said something really interesting where you said that you always captain teams coming through age grades and playing in different sports, because sometimes you get made captain because you're just the best player in the team, not necessarily someone who's really into the captaincy role. What's your relationship with leadership within the team at the moment?
Well, so I guess if you go back, I was vice captain, obviously, with Sarah Hunter, then did my neck and wasn't in the game for 14 months. New coaching staff.
But you'd also captain every time Sunta wasn't available for selection or anything.
Yeah, so like in that bigger leadership group piece, obviously was then out of the game for 14 months with basically a brand new head coach, of which I had no experience of before. So then when you come back into the game, which was pretty much like this time last year, I think, everything is about getting yourself back healthy, getting yourself back on the field, trying to get back in a shirt, and then you kind of go from there. So I was put into the leadership group in the summer for WXV because unfortunately, obviously, Meg hurt her ankle and wasn't able to come in. So I did a little Meg Jones filling
like
job.
Like for like.
Cameo, say less. Yeah, very similar. I mean, wow.
Similar height.
Uncanny.
Direct.
Really. I mean.
But honestly, I think when you talk about that like freeing up piece, it is a role I've had probably for quite a long time under mids, both in sevens and 15s. But obviously being out of the game for a long time and coming back into it, it's never something I pined for. Like it's not a role I feel like I need in order to fulfill myself or whatever. I've enjoyed it, but it is all consuming. Like it really is. So actually coming back in kind of with that second chance mentality post neck, it has been freeing. It's, you know, you get way more time in camp. You get the opportunity to just actually be in moments more.
Play more games.
Play more card games and things like that.
You don't like meetings. That's what you're telling me. Don't like meetings.
What do you mean?
So from that point of view, like I hope that all of the girls, and I messaged Zoe and Packer in the week, know that if they need anything or a different ear that isn't in a leadership group or isn't offering an opinion in those meetings at the moment, then like I'm always here. But my perspective will be, you know, different or the same to probably what they're already thinking or have already heard. So yeah.
I'll be leaning on Scousy anyway.
Yeah, I think we all know, like, yeah, leadership groups get picked, whatever the coaches see. But I think there are certain people that players will always go to, and Scaz, no matter what role she's in, will always be that consistent, like reliable person. And I think if anyone needs a bit of advice in the squad, like Scaz is the girl.
And that's what's been really interesting for me from the position that I hold, sitting on this side, just seeing the podcast Scaz and the podcast Meg and the podcast Mo, is socially and even within our podcast setup now, I would, for anyone who's never worked in production, I would explain it like Shira's our captain, our producer is our captain. She sets the pace. She speaks to everyone directly. She basically looks over the dashboard at where we're going next. The rest of us are just busy moving the wheels. And
she sits on the bonnet.
Yeah, she sits on the bonnet. What's been interesting for me in the last few years on this project is what a natural leader you are, Scazzy, but in the most low-key, understated, stealth way possible, which is why Mo is almost just like broken her neck or from nodding.
For the audio listeners.
For someone who's listening to this and didn't see this. Mo is not falling asleep. She was just nodding profusely. Do you relate?
Oh, 100%. I think... you have certain people in life that bring out the best in people, and Scaz is definitely that. And I think, I don't know if she knows how much she does that for the people around her, because she's not, I don't think you're one that, she doesn't offer massive opinions and she'll get to know people and she'll sit in the background and she'll observe a lot and little bits like that. But she'll always bring people up or say the right thing at the right time or whatever's needed in that moment to be able to like move things along or make people better or just change your viewpoint slightly so that you see something else.
Yeah. And so good at having a tough conversation in a really smart, understated way.
In the best way.
Yeah.
So why do you think I'm all right? She's brought me up. She's helped my mum and my family bring me up.
You're older than me, right?
I stand by it, Emily. I don't care the age gap.
And this is also a refrain we have on the show. Mo bigging you up. You laughing and giggling. What do you get from being front and centred, like exposed to Mo on a regular? She's like,
absolute lols.
Yeah, at least my life's not like that.
Yeah. It's like... Jeremy Kyle, like first hand. I feel good about myself. Yeah.
I would love to have recorded some of our combos over the years.
no, like a lot of fun. Obviously, that's why we're still friends and have been through as much as we have together. But I think one of Mo's great leadership qualities is like her kindness and her care. Like she will find answers to questions, get around people because of she wants somebody to feel better, feel, you know, involved, all of those sorts of things. And also a little bit like you spoke about Marley being a fixer, Mo also likes to fix things. Like Mo's the sort of person that would try and fix the world if she had the energy to do that. And so in a leadership group like that, super important.
And amongst all the other things, these guys are the best tactical technicians that rugby has to offer. So in terms of like things that knowledge on the pitch, like these are the two that you're going to be turning to understand the game more. Like biggest critiques of themselves, but also wanting to develop the game. And I think that's a big leadership quality, just as much as the high empathy that Skaz holds as well, mm-hmm. as well as Moses. And probably something that empathy isn't really, applauded within leadership roles as much. You normally look for your like direct, assertive natures, which tends to be your stereotypical leaders, whereas high empathy is probably something that is only just being spoken about in leadership qualities. And I think that's such a strong one, but sometimes tough to get because you also want to make sure everyone's happy, but you want to get the best out of people, and you do that by showing empathy and sharing that vulnerability with people.
And that's what I've been so fascinated about all of you guys, because as I say, in any other country, Skazzy would be like head and shoulders, the best candidate for the job. Mm. This England team has so many incredibly strong characters, people who bring amazing attributes to the pitch outside of being great tactical, you know, like super experienced rugby players, also just people who lead in such an interesting variety of ways. But how hard is that to then get everyone to almost come together and push in the same direction under the same umbrella, under the same banner, keeping in mind that they might not agree on everything, mm-hmm. because you have so many different ways of looking at the same problem? How hard is that? What is the solution?
You find a common goal, a common target, which essentially this year is to win the World Cup.
It's pretty easy.
It's a pretty easy one. But further than that, you know, we've tried to develop on for the girls' mentality. So in terms of our values and what we want to do beyond the game as well. I know we spoke about it last time about when do we stop talking about leaving a legacy, but that's a continuous thing that we'll always do. And I think a big one for us that we've spoken about with the girls is for the girls. And that can come in every capacity, whether we're doing it for the girls now who are here sitting in the room, the girls before us that have paved the wave, stitching their badge on their tops, etc., or the girls that are coming after us in the next four-year cycle or eight-year, 12-year cycle. So I think that's always something we kind of speak about as a group. And yeah, a common goal is always easy to give you purpose.
It is challenging though, because if you think, and I guess the experience that you're speaking about, you imagine that experience at every Prem club at the moment and the influence they're having on that club, those players and how they play the game, which is,
And decisions made.
And probably like we're talking right at the forefront of that regular. How often do you chat to Linny about what you're going to go after this weekend? This weekend?
Yeah, do you want to go?
Sorry, we're recording this before the Gloucester Loughborough Lightning game.
Disclaimer, the subtle
digs we're getting.
There's quite a lot of energy in the air here because they haven't actually played one another yet.
But I guess the input and the all of those chats that you those people everywhere at all those clubs would normally be having, you then pull all of that, you're skimming the top, aren't you, to bring all those people then into the same squad, in an England squad, the time together, so you picture it in a Six Nations time together, especially this year with how the league is in terms of semi-finals, boom, first game is tiny. So to do that is challenging. The bit I'm really excited about this season, and hopefully we're all healthy and involved, is the big pre-season we've got into the World Cup. So Six Nations will be like a quick dress rehearsal almost. It won't be that, but
rapid fusion.
Yes, it will be a little bit, whereas actually that time over the summer, lots of running and gym, I'm sure, but actually once you get into the rugby stuff, it's going to be so much time together, really nailing on that narrative that we want to go after, how we want to play the game, and everybody on board. Because I also think in a tournament like that and the way the squad is at the moment, if you're not on board, it'll be very obvious and you probably won't be there for very long.
Can we talk about your Insta story about Sam Monahan, Hannah Jones? and Zoe will cross.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
Sorry,
I thought you were going about a different one.
The salmon and crisps.
No, I thought you were going about out her close friends.
There
then.
Was a close friend's Insta story about Mo thinking that no one else would like salmon and crispy wedges.
I stand by it. Salmon goes with rice.
I'm with you, Moses. I'm with you.
I disagree. I'd eat a crispy wedgie with salmon.
I mean,
yeah, but would you eat it together? Would you put a bit of salmon and a crispy wedge on your fork and eat that together?
With a holiday.
See, the texture difference, just can't get on board with it. But that is a whole nother conversation.
Okay, let's talk about the rugby Instagram story, the one that's not close friends. Mm-hmm. Sam Monahan, Hannah Jones, Zoe Aldcroft.
Mad.
At Gloucester Hartbury.
Yeah.
At Rachel Malcolm,
yeah,
wasn't
I know,
it?
I
don't know if people saw that. It's quite like little
I was like,
wide,
can we complete
it?
The set or what? So, how cool is that though? Three international captains at one club. I think that's epic.
Yeah. It is very cool to be what fair.
So you should win the league then.
Well, hopefully, yeah.
But we said this also about Dream Team. How many players was it in the Dream Team you had?
Oh, what?
Five.
Yeah,
I think it
five.
Was.
Wow. Five players.
Was it five
or three? A fifth or a third of the world Dream Team.
The world.
Mm. Like that's.
It's a lot of talent to
it's
also.
A lot of pressure,
no, it was three,
Elmer.
Wasn't
a lot of
it?
Pressure.
It was three because it was Al Morden,
so. So a fifth, but a fifth nonetheless.
A fifth of the global Dream Team in one team.
Very cool.
So you are used to that pressure cooker of different people thinking in different ways, really assertive, really talented, really proven in their own spheres, and then coming together under a circus banner and getting them to dance in the same formation.
Yeah. I think it's really simple.
Is it?
I think so. Like rugby's really simple when you actually break it down. Like just
people
do your job.
Mind.
As yeah, people are.
No, it's not. It's not. As someone who, and I don't have the rugby reference.
Can I see you run, actually? We don't want
to no, I want to hear Alma. I want to hear Alma tell me about rugby.
No, no, no. What I'm saying is people are not simple. People are not straightforward. And managing them. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I'm constantly working in teams with people, at my day job. But it's so challenging to make sure that you can have everyone's best attributes kind of function together in harmony in ways that enhance the collaboration, not undermines the collaboration. And anyone who's in any managerial role anywhere, basically in the world, is constantly just sitting with that puzzle of making sure that we're allowing people to express themselves in ways that is constructive, that doesn't undermine the bigger picture because they feel like they're not being recognized enough or they're not being listened to enough. These things are complex. You guys just make it look very simple.
I think it's just a really good group of girls. I think when you get a quality group of people together, the standards just take care of themselves. Like, we don't talk about culture. I've said it a few times, but we don't. But I think everyone's so driven. And when you've got so many people with the same drive and want to be the best that they can be, that just kind of like grabs everyone else along and pulls them up with you. And we're very, very fortunate with the player pool that we have at Gloucester. Like, everything kind of takes care of itself, and sometimes you just need to keep an eye out for those that need an arm round and a little bit of help or a little bit of a nudge here and there to try and help them to like either see the way that you're trying to go or get them back on board with what you're trying to do. And then it just kind of
is it fair, and I'm not necessarily saying from your point of view that not at all, but it's unrealistic in any environment for it all to be sunshine and rainbows. And sometimes like the Instagram world or what the media or whatever can make it very much seem like that. From my opinion, like teams and cultures and stuff, they will always go through that, and it's the ones that will address it as opposed to just be like, that's happening but I'm going this way.
Well, we've had
and just leave it be. Like, you've got to go through it.
I think the beauty is like Zoe and I'm quite an open person. I'm a very open person.
Yeah.
We had a really tough conversation like a month or so ago, where there was a bit of challenge about how much trust there was in the group. And we got it brought to us by Linny, me and Zoe. And like, it hit so hard because I would never, ever, ever want anyone to feel like I didn't have their best interests or I didn't trust them or anything like that. So I was like, look, like, we're addressing this. And Linny was like, oh, I'm not sure. And we were like, no, like, that's dangerous. Like, if it's a few people saying it, like, no way, like, we're going to stand up and talk about this. So Zoe and I stood up in front of all the girls and we ended up crying. Like, we both ended up like, not bawling, but because we were so emotional that people thought that we weren't caring about like the best for them, or we didn't have their best interests at heart type thing. And like, that's it. Like, you just have to hit stuff head on, however you think that's right. Like, sometimes you're going to get it wrong. Sometimes I'll go and apologize after. Like, I've done that quite a bit, but you have to, like you said, put yourself in those shoes and also be really vulnerable and be okay being vulnerable in front of people. Cause I think that speaks volumes about you and where you see, like, how much you care about the girls, if that makes sense.
It's really hard to assume someone's intent if they don't say it sometimes. Like, you can all, like, your actions will speak for you sometimes, but you need to know someone's intent. So you never know what someone's kind of going through. You don't know what they're kind of dealing with. So for someone to have that opinion, I had a similar convo in Tigers the other day as well. They assumed my intent wasn't positive when actually it was quite the opposite. You know, I'm giving this energy is because I care for you. I actually care for you. That's how I see for it. So if you don't have those conversations, it's really, really tough to even delve into to where you're at as a group. So that's really powerful.
And I think like the more you know people, the more you don't have to have those conversations because you kind of know what's going on before it's even happened and you can put those arm around. But I genuinely think like the challenge that we've got coming through now is like the younger generation don't want to be vulnerable and don't really want to open up and have those like conversations. And it's how you actually get the best out of this next generation, which is definitely something that I'm trying to learn and work through. And
I think you also need to give younger people some space because they are young. They're on their training 100%. Wheels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, so, but it's how you get the best out of that. And I think it's TikTok. A different way. But it is, in my opinion, it's a different way to
communicate.
And like, it's not a sit down, have coffee, have a lot of eye contact, that sort of thing. And that's something that I'm trying to learn is like how you break into that bit.
Hey, walk and help.
Walk and talk is huge. Why do you think many podcasts or interview formats in the space are not sitting down like this, looking at each other in the face, but rather two people walking in the same direction?
Didn't even know that.
For a lot of people, it's a lot easier to have a conversation when they're not squaring up against someone. What were you going to say, mate?
No, that was it. Just science, I think.
Science.
Yeah, science.
Just science.
That's what I have to say.
She's here with the big quote.
Sorry, how is that science? Educate me.
Well, it's like people science, isn't it? It's like sociology, isn't it? It's a form of science, isn't it?
It's like sociology, isn't it? That's your line.
Kitty cat.
If in doubt.
Anyway, okay, music.
Next thing on the agenda board. Next thing on our list to discuss, the Meg versus Skaz game.
Oh, yes, you're having it. You're really having it.
Come on.
Shoot, add some context.
If Skaz is not facing up to the Moses, she's facing up to the Meg.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a never-ending
I didn't realise that was a replacement thing.
Oh. Never. No, you are not. I cannot replace you.
Carry on.
So this was actually Meg's idea, so I'm definitely not claiming this. But so we're paired up with community clubs with the Red Roses. Everybody has a community club. I think we've spoken about it before. You'll go and do sessions a couple of times throughout the year, try and create a connection. Often it's your first club or a club that's got a special meaning to you for whatever reason. So anyway, mine and Meg's clubs are both in Leicestershire. Meg is with Loughborough Town. I'm with Leicester Forest, my first club. Anyway, Meg had already done her community appearance. I went and did mine. And the girls were all like, when are we doing that match v Meg's team? And I was a bit like, ooh, I don't know. She was like, yeah. Meg said two things. She said, she's way better at you at 13. And she said that and she said that we can play a match against Meg's team. And I was like, all right, cool. I was like,
can I give context on the thing?
No. Skaz is telling the story. Come on, Skaz.
So anyway, to kind of fast forward a little bit, on the 26th of January, which is the day after Loughborough and Tigers play each other, so hopefully Meg and I play each other, we're going to basically go and front our community clubs, be their coaches, be their hype girls, be their
water girls. Tea runners.
Yeah, all of the above, like lines person, whatever we need. Mm-hmm.
Lines person, there is no way you two are running line.
Why not? I know when there's a foot in touch.
Get them on it.
Here we go.
I know when there's foot in touch or someone's offside. I've seen it. I've seen what they do. Promise. Yeah, so that's going to be some fun, I think. And we're trying to get a bit of energy around it, make a bit of a thing. We've invited the Loughborough girls.
Where's it being played?
It's going to be played at Leicester Forest.
Leicester Forest.
So, got a 4G there.
So those girls are going to come and do some flag bearing at Matty Hollywood Welford Road.
No, you should get Loughborough and Leicester to hold flags for the girls to run out.
That would be a good idea. Yeah, all ideas welcome.
Yeah, we are open book here.
It's my mum's 60th, otherwise I'd come and hold a flag. We're
can't miss Sally's birthday.
And we never go away, so I actually can't miss that.
I'm in South Africa, sorry.
Get the girls to do that. That would be sick.
I thought coin toss as well would be cool. But yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Because then they're ready for the game tomorrow. Yeah, the day after.
So it's fully in the... It's in motions.
Yeah, so it's looking good.
In motion.
We got some probably marketing to do next week.
Yeah,
which we'll sort in camp.
So imagine. wait for this social post. I'm thinking, are you going to post? I'll probably get tagged and maybe collab on something. You know, like the half shoulder where you're like kind of.
It's called the hero shot.
The hero shot. Be more like this. Yeah, sorry, I'm a bit like that. Over the shoulder. Over the shoulder. Yeah, but you know, like the mean one, right? I might be in a Les Ferrés top, Meg might be in a Loughborough Town top.
For example.
Who knows? Watch the space.
Imagine running out and like Rachel Malcolm made a cocaine holding a flag up for you.
That
would be sick.
Not that you should run enough, but...
No, that's true. Yeah, cool. Rachel Malcolm made me cocaine. Sorry, it's Meg V. Scars. Not Rach V. Ames.
With the support of Dr. Malcolm.
Yes.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
Nice, guys. That's awesome.
Yeah. So hopefully it is a cool thing.
I love that. Being the change you want to see.
Yeah.
I mean, not waiting around for someone else to do it. Doing it yourself.
Sorry, can I just talk about not being better than 13?
We've forgotten about it.
The girls were coming up to
now
me going,
making it a thing.
Like, I've got Skaz's already. Can I have yours? And I was like, I can't be second choice. And I was like, when you see Skaz tomorrow, tell her. I'm number 13. And I was putting a hashtag 13 underneath my signature.
Yes, she was. Oh, wow. Everything that I then signed was like,
hashtag 13.
What you didn't know is you left too big of a gap and I just put it in between.
23.
I love the way that you have turned the past year, Meg, into so much generosity and gratitude. And to come back to what I said at the start of the show, I have, as someone who works in content all the time, I have a really big issue around people who use anyone's trauma and an opportunity to discuss that trauma as an opportunity to build clicks, farm clicks off the back of someone else's very real experience, personal experiences. I would never want to discuss anyone's trauma unless this is something that they've put on the agenda, which is why we've had Meg on the show repeatedly now over the last few months, and we've never discussed what you've been going through in your personal life. And the fact that you have so vulnerably and with so much strength spoken about it in the last few weeks and the response that we've seen to that has meant that this has opened the floor for you to decide how we have this conversation. But for those who don't know, Six Nations with the Red Roses in the spring, playing out of your skin. I mean, just some absolutely sensational rugby.
Hashtag 13.
Back to GB7s for the Olympics. Hashtag 13.
That's a lovely call down.
For the Olympics in July, less than 2 weeks later, 4 days before you were heading back into England camp for WXV prep, your dad passes away from lung cancer. 2 days into camp, you rupture your ankle ligaments. 12 weeks out, and lucky for us, this meant that you were very available for the good, the Skaz, and the rugby in that period.
The car was born.
The Barbie car emerged from that ankle ligament period.
Some of my good work, that was some good stuff.
Some of the best work you've ever done. I mean, the Six Nations now pales in comparison.
Yeah.
And then you make it back onto the pitch over the autumn, and your mum passed away at the start of December. And then there's the big game, and the big game performance that was just sensational over Christmas. It's January 2025. A lot of people find January a very tough time, a very dark time of the year. And here we are, and you are having the bravest, biggest conversation at a time of the kind of grief that I can't even begin to imagine. Talk us through what it's been like the last few weeks.
Yeah. I've never really faced much adversity, I would say, in my life. So this was kind of all new to me when my dad got diagnosed in January 2024. So it was almost like I was grieving my dad while he was still alive. Mm-hmm. We didn't realize how quick it was going to be. So that was a massive, you know, turning point for me. But I've always used rugby. It's always been my, I say escape, but I'm not escaping from anything. Mm-hmm. It just meant I could kind of switch off and be who I felt like that gave me the identity that rugby's given me. So I've always had that, and I think particularly when my dad got diagnosed, nothing else really mattered to me. Like rugby did matter, but being there for my dad and my family was what mattered to me the most. And that was kind of the first time I've ever felt that, because we can digress a little bit later, but I felt I carried a lot of like shame and embarrassment of my family growing up without me actually knowing, because I was going through trauma with my mum because she was an alcoholic and she was an addict, obviously. And that kind of, my dad passed away and I thought that was kind of like the worst thing in the world. And then the injury didn't matter to me. I actually thought it was the best thing that could have happened to me when I did get injured.
You were so sanguine about it when it happened as well. Yeah. You were so self-aware. You were like, you know, this is, mm-hmm. you know, just life telling me you slow down a little bit.
100%. And I've just... And I am so such a person of what will be, and I think everything happens for a reason. You learn through all these, you know, I've had an ample amount of injuries and I've learned so much through each one. And this was just another one of those lessons for me. And then my mum passed away, and that one, it really hit home as well. Like, I think, like, I'm not going to be the first or the last person that's ever going to lose two parents or lose anyone. It kind of hit me, obviously, a lot harder because what my mum was going through as well. Mm. And it's kind of the first time I've ever felt grief and realised how impactful it was to speak about it, because speaking about it, one, helps me, like it's really helpful for me as an individual to understand it, but also for others, because there's no right or wrong, there's no written book for it, it's genuinely how you feel, and people will take longer, like I know my brother and sister are taking longer with it. And you know, we live in a westernized culture as well, where you're kind of told to crack on. And the first time, and I learned a lot from my dad passing away to my mum's, albeit only 4 months. When my dad passed away, I thought, oh yeah, I need to go straight back into rugby. Like, don't worry about anything else. I just crack on, put my head down. But actually, that was the worst thing to do. Mm. So then with my mum, I took some time. And I say it took time, it took a couple of weeks, if that really. But I slowed down and just completely left everything at arm's length. So yeah, crazy, crazy year, because I always say it, I'm not a sad person, and I hate being that sad person. So I've actually started understanding sadness for the first time, really, which is, it's strength in its own, I guess, weird ways, is learning that. Because I'll always say as well, I've always been on like an empathy journey, because I've realised how powerful it is. And probably in my younger years, I didn't express that much empathy for others, whereas I've tried to work on that and understand others. And then this is really, you know, they say life throws lessons at you, and this has been a massive lesson for me, because yeah, there's just so much I feel like I'm learning from this process of going to therapy and reflecting on myself and feeling my emotions, sitting with my emotion, understanding that emotions will pass, understanding you'll never know what someone else is going through, because I'm willing to put a front on most of the time, and actually 90% of the people I would hang around with wouldn't have and even known what I was going through. So yeah, it's just a big perspective piece, really, and I think that's just how I've tried to flip it in my brain. Can't remember what your question was, but I think that was kind of part of it.
It's really brave, flexing that sadness muscle, not one that you are used to using.
No, not at all.
No,
and I think it's important to be sad, and I not like I've never been sad in my life, but it's like I'm now willing to be sad. And you know, when people say, oh, how are you? I'm willing to say, oh, I'm sad today. I'm feeling sad today. But I'll still show up, and, you know, because I think that's something I'm always capable of doing, is switching on and off. Again, no right and wrong, but I'm willing to express that today I'm feeling a bit sad, or today I'm feeling anxious. You know, I never felt like I felt anxiety before, but I started having like sleep kind of like panic attacks. Like, I was really struggling to sleep, and my heart was like heavy. And I was like, oh, I've never really experienced that in my life. And again, just another emotion that I'm now able to feel and actually be relatable with others. So yeah, I just keep seeing it as a lesson, but also trying to understand it a bit more as well.
In all of this, you have gained a family member, and that is Joey, your mum's dog. Your mum lives in Cardiff.
Yeah, Caerphilly, yeah, but yeah.
And Joey was her dog. And we have a picture of Joey here on the set. Joey's been a regular on the gram over the last few weeks as well. Joey's face, honestly.
Yeah, he's lovely, isn't
he? He is just too cute. He's adorable. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So Joey, you're on our dog
I'm now a dog. Yeah, I say dog dad. Celia's dog mum, which is kind of funny. But we're cat people. We're kitty catty people. And
even though it always feels like you're teasing me.
No way. Never. So yeah, like it was kind of a no-brainer because my mum was struggling with grieving my dad. She actually wasn't with my dad. They'd been divorced for 10 years, but she really struggled with my dad's grief, as many others were. But because my mum was an addict and she was an alcoholic, that's what she turned to at the time. And Joey was living with her. I thought I needed to take Joey away from her to look after him and protect him, but also as well understand that my mum, what she was doing wasn't right. And it's such a weird process with dealing with people with addiction and it's something I've learned over the years as well, trying to understand it, that I would never understand really fully, particularly alcoholics. But you have to let them suffer in their own suffering. Mm-hmm. And that was the advice I got. You know, as much as you want to help and you want to be there for them, the hardest part is allowing them to suffer in their own suffering. So in order for them to reach rock bottom, and rock bottom can come in many ways, losing your house, losing your family, or, you know, it could just be simple as losing your job, whatever, because you want to isolate yourself in that position. So that was the hardest part to do, because all I wanted to do was fix. As a leader, I wanted to fix it. I can sort this out. I know I'm going to take reins. And why has no one ever helped her? And why has no one ever done this? When quite the opposite, you know, my dad tried to help as much as he could, and it came to the point where he had to leave her for the sake of the family, because it was dragging my brother down, who was still living at home. I kind of had an escape with rugby, whereas I could go away to Hartbury College at the age of 16. I lived away from home, only went back every other weekend. So only saw my mum in snippets, XYZ. You can't help someone in that state. They have to help themselves. But it was so hard to do that. And that's why I took Joey from hers, because she needed to realise that this is what happens when you're in that state. But there's all sorts going on. She hadn't got an emotional, irrational thought process going on. And there's loads that I wouldn't even be able to delve into, because it's too science-based for me.
Sociology.
Yeah, it's deep. It's a deep root cause that you just never know the answer to. But I took Joey. Joey's been with us now, myself and Celia. We had a few tears at the beginning, but he's the most lovely temperament, and now he's a part of my mum, essentially, which I can, one, give the love and joy that she possessed and the kindness that she had in her heart and give to Joey, but also, yeah, just also say, like, to look after something so pure, which I wish I could have done for my mum, but I couldn't, because you can't help as much as you want it.
So talking about it now, what is it that you want to achieve by discussing this? I mean, you're processing, it's part of your healing. What do you wish more people would know about addiction?
I want to try and get the taboo away from it, because I think a lot of the time, and I've been through this process from the age of, I'd say, 14, whereas I resented my mum, I hated my mum, I was angry at my mum, but then I also loved my mum and I felt sorry for my mum. And there was all those emotions.
And they're all valid.
And all valid, 100%, yeah. 100%. But actually, it wasn't a choice. My mum didn't have a choice. We see it as, well, yeah, she chose to pick up that bottle and drink. She chose to order that alcohol into her house. But we're humans of survival, so we always want to pick what's going to help us survive. And that's what my mum, the disease of the illness of alcoholism, was. I need this bottle in order for me to survive my next day, XYZ. And it releases dopamine and all those chemicals in your brain, which then reinforces any habit that you then go, okay. Because we can all argue we're probably addicted to something, sort of thing. You can be addicted to work, to rugby, to whatever.
Validation.
Yes, exactly. And there's so much of that like cheap, we call it cheap dopamine in the world, scrolling through social media. And then we become addicted to it, which then X, Y, Z. So she was, that's the biggest, my biggest messaging is, one, as someone living with someone with an addict, is you can't help them as much as you want to. All you can show is love and compassion and care for them, so you can just be there for them. And that's something I've learned massively.
Is it like any illness sufferer?
Any.
You know? Any illness. If you had a family member who was going through any cancer, all you can do, you can't heal that.
No.
You are just the support act. Your role is to be there for them in the ways that you can physically manifest.
100%. And that's, you know, I almost had two, like I was grieving my dad while he was still alive, but I could understand that a bit more. You know, he was ill. But then the amount of support he got was crazy. Like, as soon as you get told you've got cancer and it's terminal, the amount of support you get is wild. Like, he was getting things paid for him, or even get a free car if you do this. It was just crazy. Whereas my mum, I was with her in these meetings going to get help, and it was like drawing blood from a stone.
It's looked at a different way,
isn't
it? It's
the taboo around it. Yeah. It's wild. Not even taboo. Well, it is taboo, yeah. But also the stigma, yeah. Mm-hmm. And everything that comes with it. So it was just, that's really what stuck on with me. And I thought, she wanted help. She'd say to me, I want to get better, Meg. I really want to get better. Oh. And then, you know, she'd go out of her way. She had high anxiety. She had high levels of depression as well. And I'd take her to these meetings and, you know, just be a tick box for this. And it was just so hard to see, because she did really want to get better. She did really want to get better. And I carry so much guilt with that as well, because, you know, part of me, and a lot of it is like, yeah, you can't help her. And I realise that, but you just think, could I have just done something slightly different? You know, I called ambulances on her. She refused treatment and stuff like that, because she was a nurse and she gave so much to everyone. She understood how it all worked. She never wanted to go to the hospital because she felt embarrassed. She felt so much shame. She carried so much shame on what she was doing. She never wanted us to come and visit her house. So there was just all of that. And I just felt guilty that I just said yeah to her. Like, oh, don't come see me. Oh, okay, Mum, that's fine. I won't come and see you, because that's what I thought she wanted. When actually her picking up the phone to me to say don't come was almost like a cry for help, in the sense of like, I don't want you to come because I feel shame. Please help me. Because she was a deep human. She just didn't ever showed anything other than I'm strong for my family. I work ridiculously hard. You know, she, whether this is a weird flex or not, but she worked like 33 night shifts on the bounce. That was like, she had like the best rapport in the ward. But that resilience and hard work that...
Because what does she do?
She's a nurse. She's a T4 neuro nurse. So she works with those with severe brain damage, and she'd be looking after everyone 24/7, come home and then not look after herself. So it was so hard to see. But yeah, I think she was an alcoholic, but on top of that, she was this beautiful soul and kindest human that I just wish she'd saw how much influence she had on the world. And I always used to say, but I wish I could have given her my level of self-esteem and confidence, because that's all she needed.
But you are her greatest testimony.
Yeah.
Okay. I think also, like, just to add to it, like, we're outsiders looking in, and I don't know, like, half of the stuff that you've had to deal with. And, like, so a bit of context, like, my dad's brother passed away from alcoholism, and he actually came to live with us when we were younger. He was like, I think he was like 34, 36, something like that when he passed away. Mm. And it's like so hard to see, because same thing, like you do everything you can. But from an outsider looking in, I don't think there's much more you could have done. Like every time that you were like called into action or needed to do something, you were always doing whatever you thought was right or whatever you were being told
you
to
did
do.
Everything you could. Yeah.
Like you've genuinely done everything you can, mate. And you're freaking strong, and everybody looks up to you, and the amount of resilience and everything else. It doesn't take away any of the hurt.
So talk to me about living room.
Yes, living room. So when you grieve, you kind of go through this wild process of, which I've learned, of like sadness, anger, resentment. You search as well, which was one of the kind of crazy graphs that you go through, but searching is one. So I started searching to help my mum. I put all my energy into like trying to fix my mum after my dad passed away. So I was really on this mission of like, I want my mum to get better. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do everything I possibly can, because when I'm in a position to do so, like I live this comfortable life up in Leicester. I live, you know, I'm grateful that I've got this opportunity to do what I love every single day. Why wouldn't I go and help someone that's put so much time and effort and love and taught me all these amazing things and try and help her? So I went to try and help mum as much as I could, searching to help. And I went through a couple of ways. Again, I just thought they were really terrible avenues, and it's, again, not a lot of support for her. But then towards the end, before she passed away on the 5th of December, a couple of weeks before, I met, his name was Wynne, and he's the CEO of Living Room. I don't know if he has that role still, but he works heavily within the Living Room. And the only reason I know him is because my amazing support network in Cardiff, Ruby and the Humphreys, Juliet and Jeff, were looking after me when I was trying to help my mum. They'd put me up in their home in Cardiff, but also trying to help me navigate through it all, because I was grieving my mum while she was still alive, while she was, grieving my dad, which is such a crazy process. Anyway, so a couple of doors down, they had a neighbour. She's the daughter of Wynne, which is so crazy connection. They said, look, this is Ruth. Her dad was an alcoholic. He's 76, but he now is an addict into helping other addicts, which is kind of the AA process, the Alcohol Anonymous process. You open up, you go through the 12 steps, and then your last one is given back to the community. And he's done that in a phenomenal way. So it's early doors still, and it's kind of, he just articulated it in a way to me about alcoholism and how my mum's brain worked. And I just thought, wow, this is the first time I've actually seen a bit of hope in that my mum getting some help. So I'd arranged a call with him first, and he said, come on your own. And he explained to me, you have to let them suffer in your own suffering. You can't help fix anything. The best thing you can do is show love and care. Basically, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You know, that sort of analogy. And essentially, I then arranged, I said, mum, look, I've met this guy. He's amazing. Like, he's inspired me. I think he's going to do a good job for you. And she was like, yeah, I'd love to meet him. She was still drinking at this point. So, it's not like she's completely switched on to what's happening. Anyway, she arranges to chat to him. But I think it was on the 2nd of December, she rings him to say, I won't be able to make it to you because I'm drunk, basically. And he said, that's okay. We'll arrange another time. And I contacted him and I said, oh, did my mum see you in the end? She said no, but there's lots of hope. She's reached out to me. Like, that's a big thing to do, you know. Mm. Unfortunately, my mum passed away then on the 5th, which was 3 days later. So didn't manage to meet Wynne. But I just felt there was so much of a connection that my mum even felt she was inspired and a bit of hope with Wynne and the Living Room that he works in. That I felt like it was only right for me to, one, understand this process more, because I have monthly updates with Wynne. I chat to him still. That I want to give back to this community as well, and I want to tackle that stigma of addiction through the Living Room. Essentially, it's set up like this, like someone's living room, and it's less informative of like AA, where people, you know, of course you meet other addicts as well in different positions. But it's a bit more one-to-one, digressing, and he goes through the process with you, but helps you rationalise it in a way you can kind of understand on a level. Because my mum was a woman of science as well. She was a nurse. Like, she wasn't stupid. She was so intelligent. You know, she knew that she needed to be convinced thoroughly. But the avenues we tried just didn't do that. But I felt like Wynne did. So I'm on this new journey of helping and hopefully becoming a patron of the Living Room to try and, you know, just do my bit that we're all trying to do in this crazy world. So, yeah, I'm in that searching period of my grief, of trying to find answers. And this is where I'm putting my energy at the moment. So
I love that. Livingroom-cardiff.com.
Check out their work.
Yeah, and they're based in Carmarthenshire as well.
And then old Joey, Skazzy, you've been, what, timeshare parenting?
A little bit.
Co-parenting.
Because he's been popping up all over the place. I mean, Joey's just been getting around.
So we don't
he?
Live too far, obviously, from Meg. So whenever they're back down in London or, you know, going to other places or need a weekend or whatever, we've had Joey Ladd and we love him to pieces. He's like, he's the kindest little soul. Everywhere he's gone, you've taken him to Tigers a few times, haven't you?
Well behaved?
Amy, Amy, well, all well behaved, bar there was one incident the other day, wasn't there, where pair of senior's pants ended up in his mouth.
Naughty
he's
boy.
He's got a thing for little pants. Yeah, naughty, naughty boy.
Naughty
and
boy.
Celia was showing him the pants and he was all sheepish. He was like,
have you seen those videos online where it's like there's a pillow that's all the feathers are out of it and there's a feather hanging out of his mouth? It was a bit like that. And he was like side-eyeing the opposite way.
Oh,
but honestly, he's such a good boy. I think Meg and Celia definitely are not dog people, so there's been a fair bit of, don't worry about that. It doesn't matter about that. Just trying to help.
Supporting.
Yeah.
Skazzy and Ab as well have just been amazing. Like, Skaz was the first to be like, I can come and help whenever. And you were the first person over to come and sit with Joey when he was a bit scruffy. He's well groomed there, but he was a bit scruffy, a bit smelly. But yeah, Skazzy, it's just been amazing. So I really appreciate that. And thank you. Because, like we said, we're new dog mums and we just don't know whether you can do certain things.
But you follow, you look at other dog mums now.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm now like in awe. And I'm like, I stop and like look as, like if people post dog photos, I'm like, oh, so cute. Oh, wow. I can really relate.
It's the cutest thing. So we were, after the big game, we all went for brunch because we'd all stay down. And we saw Annie Poole, who's one of our former managers. She's now with Harlequins. And she was like, oh my God, he's so cute. And Meg was like, is he? Like, just like this sense of pride, and obviously it represents so much of your mum and all of that. It was just one of the like the sweetest moments because of the care
and
she now has for Joey.
After that, she was like, oh, can I give him a treat? Took a treat out of the thing. It was like this long stick thing. Broke it up and gave him a bit, and Meg was like, you can break
she was like never thought of that.
I think you just have to give the whole treat to him. You can just
so
break it up and...
well.
I can save so much money just breaking
just split them up. More treat times. But so, the poor guy's treat, his teeth aren't great.
No, he's got to get 12 teeth out next
week.
Goodness, Joey. He's got a bit, got some dental issues, but he's all fit. He'll get all fixed up. So.
I feel like Joey's absolutely lucked out in life with you and Celia, who is now a dog mom overnight.
Celia
dog
took
mom.
A bit of persuading though, didn't she?
She did, yeah. She came back from a trip from Dubai where she was like on a yacht, loving life. Everything was pristine. We've got a white sofa. Like we have.
She's very house proud.
Yeah, our house is very pristine. You know,
it's quite an Instagram
Scandi.
House.
Instagram house, Scandi vibes. And the first thing she says is, we've got a white sofa. I was like, okay. I was like, but Joey's going to have to come back. Like, there's no other option.
Get so, a blanket.
But we got a white sofa. It was just, bless no. Come on.
Scott
she,
God.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. But she obviously come back from Dubai and she's just a bit like, what is this smelly dog doing in my house? But she loves him now.
She's totally melted, isn't she?
Can you tell the story about her mate at Twickenham?
The cat. I don't know what relevance this is.
There's no relevance.
You need to know Millie to know, find it funny. Basically, she's got a really, really girly mate that doesn't even do any sport called Millie.
You have girly mates who don't do any sport.
I actually do.
What?
Yeah, I got really girly mates that don't play any sport. I know, it's crazy.
What do you talk about?
Yeah, but she's got a cat at home as well.
Oh, with the me. Yeah.
What is that? Alma's
gonna love it.
She's got a cat at home that's like 15 years old, like really old.
Just I have a 16-year-old.
Fine, just need some love. Anyway, she's like the most allergic human in the world, like allergic to egg, everything. So this cat, she was sleeping downstairs. This cat came in, Nika came in, meowing, like meow, meow, asking for attention. And she's like, oh, okay. Anyway, we get this text and she's like, hey C, hey babe. The cat just keeps me wowing.
Spell me space
wowing. Anyway, And she comes up and she's like, oh, and then the Nika comes up and she's like, oh, sorry, babe, I let her out because she was just me wowing. And then and then I was like, oh, will you take it downstairs? And she's like, yeah, okay. Okay, cat. Cat, come out. And I was like, her name's Nika, she ain't gonna follow you.
You need to pick her up.
She wants to be carried. She's spoiled like that.
So yeah, that was
me wowing.
Sorry, I just thought she would like that story.
Elmer would like I will never live beyond me wowing now. That is hilarious. But it is like that when you have many cats. Whenever someone comes to your house that actually is allergic or just does not like cats, the cats will gravitate to that person. It is a fact of the world.
That happened to me when I stayed.
Yes, they were obsessed with Scazzy. That's why she
doesn't like cats. Temperament.
Scazzy doesn't like cats.
I'm not wild for cats.
And they were all over her. And that's why she's never stayed again.
Sorry, this. Yeah, no comment.
No comment. Miggy, thank you so much for just being so strong and so generous with this journey that you're on.
Appreciate it.
And taking us all along with you.
Made easier with an amazing support network, I think. Like, I put it on my socials, but like having role models like Mo and Skaz who just show you resilience. Growing up, I think I feel privileged to have come into rugby at the best age of when it was just becoming turning pro, because I fully feel that I was led by some of the best in the world and will continue to be led, but not just in rugby, but in life itself, because of just how you guys used to tackle things. I just think I fed off that so much. So I appreciate that massively. Sorry, most
bad. My stomach. It's been going wild.
Tina, the talking tummy.
Sorry,
a jacket potato.
It's not sitting well.
We had jacket potatoes for lunch.
But no, we love you massively.
And we got you.
I think the most fitting way to close off the show is the quote that you posted on Instagram, Meg. You said, just like the old man said, the world stands still for nobody. You either move with it or you get left behind. I know which way I'm going. We're going with you. And you and the way that you carry yourself and the contributions that you make and the generosity you bring is such a great legacy, both for your mom and for your dad. You are a sensational legacy.
I appreciate it.
What a contribution they've both made to the world.
Thanks, Elma. That's very kind.
Now, if you would like to come hang out with our Meg and KDM at the PWR final, we have good news for you. We're doing a live show.
How do you know I'm not playing?
Are you going to? Well, I mean, Tigers? You haven't confirmed, Skaz. We invited you.
I think there's. So you're saying there's a chance?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
We saw the Loughborough 5-game post.
You beat Saracens. Now, like, ooh, you know.
That's so on.
We'll announce me next week.
The day after the Men's Six Nations Super Saturday is the PWR final. So even if you had a big one at the pub the day before, make sure you come on down. The final is at Stonex. Tickets go on sale tomorrow, Friday the 17th at midday on Eventbrite. Details will obviously be on the Good, the Skaz and Rugby socials. Very excitingly, we're also collaborating with the PowerPod.
That's going to be a good one.
That day.
Katie's getting it.
Getting
her Lego. Getting her Lego.
Katie agreed before she knew Meg was also good.
Didn't tell KDM that Meg's going to be there.
I just love it. It's like, she hates me, but she loves me.
Yeah.
I love it.
We've been The Good, the Skaz and the Rugby, brought to you in partnership with Vodafone. The Good, the Skaz and the Rugby is a Folding Pocket production produced by
Shara Kilgallen.
I love my rainbow cape so much.
It loves you.
It is sensational.
You've been listening to The Good, the Skaz and the Rugby with the blue tip.
The one that always wears red.
And the croissant queen.
Thanks for listening.
If in doubt.